When I first started, did we just get started right now? Can you hear me? Did I get cut off just now? Because you told me again it was being recorded. So okay, great. Wonderful. I love that it's being recorded twice now. But again, just I was going to say to anyone who popped in a little bit after my initial announcement, if you can turn your screens on, I think it encourages people to enjoy learning with other people rather than just your names. Again, your names are wonderful. But if you can turn your screens on, that's incredible. Is my Wi-Fi really bad right now? Are you guys getting me well? I'm seeing you guys in like slow-mo. So is it bad or is it good? Just give me like a, it's fine? Okay, give out it. So we were saying that Yom HaAtzmaut, no matter where we are, is a day of celebration. And it happens to be Dafka, this year. It wasn't shifted. The day wasn't changed due to other complications due to being around the Dafka on Wednesday. It's actually I think this is the only time that it falls out that we actually do it on Heyer. There are three other days that it could fall out on, and each of them are around the weekend. So it's actually Bo Bayom. And why is it important to have a Bo Bayom nature to the day? And where, can you guys see my shared screen? Everyone can see my shared screen? Yvalde. So for the first time in forever, hopefully that song is playing in your minds. It definitely is in the background of my head, being at home with my kids for Baruch Hashem for an extended period of time together. We've spent a lot of quality time, and my daughter loves the song from Frozen. If you're not holding, that's totally acceptable. But for the first time in forever, there are halachic shailos that were being asked in the state of Israel, around the state of Israel, and around decisions that were being made by the state of Israel that were really, really critically important. I once heard one of the Rosh Yeshiva, while you pointing out that every single leadership position in the Jewish community is by definition requires a psak halacha. Every decision I make, if I allocate money towards this versus towards that, if I decide that I want to invest in this thing versus that thing, if I decide I'm going to pay this person, not going to pay, all these decisions are huge shilas. And that's for an organization, let alone an institution. We're talking now about the Jewish state. So the Jewish state doesn't necessarily have a malchus at the head of it, doesn't necessarily have a rav as the prime minister. But at the same time, as a Jewish state, every major decision really comes down to real, real important halachic parameters. So I put here, it's beautiful, the next day the state of Israel is born. What an incredible day. Proclamation by the head of the government. Anyone want to read source number one here by Agnon? Anyone? We got a volunteer to read. That's so wonderful. I appreciate it, everybody. That's so nice. Come on, someone volunteer. Thank you. Please, come on. Just open your, unmute yourself. I think you can. No? Can you unmute yourselves? Well, now you pretend like you can. So, we get one volunteer. Anyone?
Yeah, I can do it.
Amazing. Go for it. Read it. It's in English. The first source.
We all wanted a Jewish state. Of course we did. But we were afraid of saying so out loud. And when the test came, we thought perhaps we should not risk it. Perhaps we should postpone it for a generation. But Ben-Gurion had the courage to proclaim the end of a Jewish statelessness in our time.
Right. And that moment is significant. The American government, while it recognized the existence of the state of Israel beforehand, basically warned Ben-Gurion not to declare a state because it was going to come at the expense of a major massacre. That the Bnei Yisrael that were living in it would be like a massacre like the Holocaust once over, that the countries around the state of Israel at the time would essentially, even though it was agreed upon by the United Nations, et cetera, they would go after us and attack us. And by the way, they did. And that's the second, literally the second knock in all the knocks of the Salvatrix, Kol Hadar Fake. Again, if you haven't read it, it's like a must reading to be a student at Yeshiva University or to be really a student of Salvatrix in any way. And to also be a religious Zionist, to not read that is like it's a shanda. You have to read Kol Hadar Fake. It's a chiv. I say it like that. Go read it. It's incredible. So the second of those miracles was the military miracle. Mamish, the Jewish people were like represented by, I don't know, a couple of hundred, maybe a couple of thousand. We're talking about their training. They didn't have uniforms. They weren't the IDF like we know it today. And they were being attacked by thousands upon thousands upon thousands of tanks and all these crazy. And they held strong. Knock number two, says Soloveitchik, in his six knocks is, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is knocking on our door, mamish, a miracle in our time, Rabbi Yad Ma'atim, incredible, an incredible moment. I would add no point out in source number one is that we all wanted the Jewish state, but many people were concerned, and there was a whole political debate. There's a whole concern. Should we declare it? Should we not declare it? Is it our place to declare it? Should we wait? Should we this? Should we that? Ben Gurion said, enough waiting. We've waited for 2,000 years. We're going to declare our state. What an incredible moment. I hope if you haven't heard it, go online and listen to the declaration. Mamish, for him to, first of all, you can listen to the United Nations vote. Incredible, because that's the first one of the Knox for Soloveitchik says. The chairman with a capital C was the Ribbono Shel Olam at that UN meeting. The same way, the HaMelech, right? The HaMelech referring to the Ribbono Shel Olam in Megillas Esther, when anytime it says HaMelech, it's referring not only to Achashverosh in some cases, but to the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So too, when it comes to the chairman with a capital C at the United Nations, when it was voted, you should go listen to that. Go listen to the proclamation of Declaration of Independence by Ben-Gurion. What incredible moments in Jewish history. Ben-Gurion had the courage to proclaim the end of the Jewish statelessness in our time. But this was not only a political debate. There was a major halachic on trying to understand what was this day? What do we make of this day? What are we doing this day? What was the nace? So like we said, maybe it was a military miracle. Maybe that was the nace. We'll get to that in a bit. Rabbi Metzia, the cook, makes the argument based on the following Gemara. The Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses who is liable if a shepherd was left town, basically left his flock and came into the town. And while he was gone, it sounds like one of those riddles, you know? You have a wolf, you have a lion, you have a lamb, you know what I'm saying? What happens, right? It's okay, so the lamb dies. It's a good trend. If you have a wolf and a lion, that lamb is no longer living. So you have a wolf, you have all these lamb, all these sheep, it's incredible. Right? And what happened? They get all torn apart and trampled upon, and it's, okay, beautiful. I mean, not so beautiful, but whatever. The owner comes along and says, if you were there, then these attacking animals would never have come after my animals. Back and forth discussion, who's liable, who's not liable. In the context of the Gemara says, maybe the shepherd could have said to the owner, look at the bottom line here. If you were worthy of a miracle occurring to you, a miracle would have indeed occurred to you, as it happened to Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, when his goats brought bears, and right, I'm sorry, goats brought bears and impaled upon their horns, without any assistance on the part of the shepherd. Without any right, said the Gemara, they asked, and let the owner say to him, granted, I was not worthy of a great miracle, but of a small miracle, etc., etc. Essentially, the discussion goes on. The Gemara understands that perhaps even if the shepherd was there, perhaps him saving, again, we don't know if the shepherd would have been there because he left, but had the shepherd been there to save the flock, maybe we would have understood that to be a miracle. A miracle? How is that a miracle? Isn't that just him fighting off the bear and the lion? So Tosfos pointed out, and this Tosfos over here on Mesiv on this Rav Sheshes line, about Hacha Shelo Hayasham Tilma Ichava Hasam Hayabo Ruach Gvura Udas Nilachem V'Hayav Mekayim Bei Gamis Ari etc. The Baal HaTos is explained, this is not a direct translation, just to let you know, that if had he been there, the experience, the moment that shepherd would have stepped up, had he had the capacity to step up, that Ruach Gvura V'Das Lilachim, and say, I'm not allowing these animals to attack, that was the nace. The nace would have been that the shepherd been able to step up to a lion. I don't know about you. I don't know about any of you. We take a poll. I don't know about any of you. You know, I'd love to dance at an Eitan Katz concert, but if there was a lion in that room, I ain't going anywhere near that lion. I don't care how many sheep are in that room. I'm running. I'm gone. So, goodbye. If anyone here wants to disagree with that, that's wonderful. I mean, I would have to see it to believe it in some ways. Maybe you have a Stern over here. Jake, would you jump at a lion if it was going at your sheep?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay, good. So we're on the same page. So what do you say? What do you think? What do you think? So says Rav Kook, in an incredible drasha. I don't have the drasha here. In fact, actually, I tried to get it because from Otsar. Otsar was overwhelmed today, presumably because everybody in the world was trying to learn Torah Eretz Yisrael today, and they all wanted to log into Otsar. And Otsar, I couldn't open it. I tried 15 times since early this morning. Couldn't open Otsar. Maybe something's going on. Maybe they shut it down for Yom HaTzimut. They say, Chas v'chalila. But Otsar, Chachma, I'm sure there's so many people in the world that are learning Torah and Otsar Chachma right now. It's just impossible. And by the way, I couldn't log into Bar Ilan. Never had this problem before because the Bar Ilan account with the library only allows 40 people on at the same time. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. Throughout the Yeshiva University world right now, there are 40 people all trying to get onto Bar Ilan. And I was number 41 or like 75. Who knows? Maybe a lot of other people also kind of. So both of those sources, I had to use Sfaria. So the sources are limited a little bit here, but I tried to bring the basic sources. What does Rav Kook explain? Let's see what Rav Kook explains. He says, what was the miracle of the day of the declaration? What happened on Hei Iyar? It wasn't the win of the war. In fact, the war didn't actually win. They didn't win the war at that point. What was the miracle? The miracle was Ben-Gurion was the shepherd of Am Yisrael. Ben-Gurion was the shepherd that said, I'll look right in a lion's eye and I'll declare my state. I don't care what they say. Because it's my flock. And I'm not going to be scared away by a lion or a bear. I'm going to run at them and chase them away. What was the nais, says Rav Kook? The nais nifla of that nigla that day was what? That Ben-Gurion stepped up and said, we have a state. That he ended the Jewish statelessness in our time. His proclamation and his ruach, again, let's read it again in the Baalei Tosfos. His ruach ugvura v'das li'lachim, that was the miracle, says Rav Kook. Let's see why that's important. So we've seen on one level what Rav Kook's perspective of the significance of the day is. Yeshua Menachem Ehrenberg says the following. He argues that one should not make a bracha of Shechianu on Yom HaAtzmaut. And he explains the difference between Yom HaAtzmaut and Chanukah is the following. On Chanukah, right, take a look here. The miraculous events of Chanukah actually took place on right? You know, the beautiful, right? I forget, actually, I don't even know this one myself. What's the riddle? How's it go? It's the Ka in the middle. Yes, my riddle, Chanukah. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, great. Oh, so Chanukah happened on Chav Hei. Yeah, yeah, you're laughing at me. It's fun. It happened on Chav Hei. It happened on Chav Hei. Chav Hei Kislev. The miracles happen on that day. He says, Ehrenberg, you make a Shechianu, you make a Halal, you do that, because the day itself was the day of the miracle. What was the miracle in Ehrenberg's point? The miracle was the miraculous war, the victory in Rabim Yan Ma'atim. Says Ehrenberg, on Yom HaAtzmaut, it's not that way. You know why? Because there was not a single miracle in the war of 1948 that happened on Hei-Iyar. He's arguing with Rav Kook. Rav Kook, what was the miracle of Hei-Iyar? Ben-Gurion stepped up and made a declaration of independence. For Rav Ehrenberg, no. That's not a miracle. And neither is the miracle of actually the war, because the war miracle took place much later. The war only started on Hei-Iyar. That's when they started to attack. I don't know if you've been to the place in Tel Aviv where they did a declaration, but there's like a back entrance. I don't know if they give this tour to everybody. I assume they do. There's a back entrance that like they had like an escape route for Ben-Gurion because they were actually being shot at in that building at the time because they were ready under war. They were under siege. Just the declaration was under siege. Again, the fact that they won that war is beyond miraculous. You look at the U.S. Army's records of it. They teach their own, and they use 1948 and 1967 as literally models of like, you know what, sometimes you plan for a million years, sometimes you don't plan at all, and I hope they mentioned the Roman Sholem was involved. If they don't, then I will. There's nothing short of miraculous. So says Rav Ehrenberg, and argues with Rav Kook, there was no miracle that happened on the day of the 5th of Iyar. That's not the miracle. The miracle happened when the 1948 War of Independence actually ended and when they were successful. So Rav Schechter takes a slightly different approach to Rav Ehrenberg and tries to argue the following. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, talks about the order of the different brachos in Shemona Esrei. Haven't davened Shanaster yet today. I mean, maybe you're in a different, you know, I shouldn't, you know, we don't call anyone out. Maybe you're in LA and it's, I don't know, it's 8:20. So you can daven Shacharis. Beautiful. It's unbelievable. You should daven Shacharis. And that's a wonderful thing to do. If you haven't davened Shanaster today, you probably should. And if you, I don't know, if you're in a later time zone already, then maybe Mincha, I'll catch you by Mincha. But you should daven Shacharis if you haven't Shacharis. So why am I bringing up Shemoneh Esrei? Because Shemoneh Esrei has 18/19 brachos, and each of those brachos was put into a specific order. The Gemara Megillah goes through each of the different brachos and why they were in that order. Why does the bracha of Gal Yisrael happen in number 7? Why is Geula, why does it happen in number 7 of the brachos in Shemoneh Esrei? Since we are going to be redeemed, right. Well, here the translation is the seventh year of the Shvius and Shvu, like in Shemitah type of thing. So we also have right. So therefore, B'Shvius, right, the Fika Chavu B'Shvius. I think Rashi and others explained that really this is talking about the thousands. Right, we're talking about the thousands. That right, Shvius is the 7,000th year of the world, so that we're going to have the Geula HaSidon by then. The Amr Mar. B'shishis kolos b'shvius milchamos motzi shvius b'david ba milcham. Right, so the Gemara itself brings this up. So that translation initially, I'm not sure. Okay, whatever. This is from Sfaradi. I don't want to comment. It's beautiful. And Baruch Hashem, again, of all the resources online that I was able to access, Sfaradi was the one that I could get onto today. So Baruch Hashem, again, Baruch Hashem, Yom Ha'atzmaut should be a day of Torah, Lima Torah Mamish. Look at the lineup of the Shiurim today. It's incredible, incredible. And the Yashar Koach, all the students involved. Says the Gemara, wait a second, Shvius? Shvius is the Geula? First of all, Shishis, they're going to be, these sounds are going to be heard, right? Heavenly sounds, okay, I don't know what that means. The Shvius, the Melchamos will happen, there'll be wars in the seventh millennia. Umot, I'm sorry, not even, right, the seventh, right, yeah. Umot say Shvius, Badav, after the seventh, that's when Ben David Bad, that's when Melech HaMashiach is going to become. Says the Gemara, says Rav Shechter, Melchama Nami Atchalta Geulahi. The Melchama, the war, is also in Atchalta Geula. It's also the beginning of the Geula. So we say the bracha of Geula, of Gal Yisrael, in the seventh bracha. Why? And not in the eighth bracha. Why? Because the seventh is when the Melchama started. When the fighting started, or when the fighting will start, I should say. So too, says Rav Shechter. Let's read inside. Anyone want to take a this is an article Rav Shechter writes about the fifth of Iyar. Rav Shechter's Shita actually is very similar to Rav Goren's perspective about the Hey Iyar. When should one say Hallel? Even if the Rabbanut switched the dates, when should you say Hallel? So I think Rav Goren says the same idea. Rav Shechter always, this is, right, if they switch the dates, so Rav Shechter still says, we'll say Hallel on Hey Iyar. Even if they do Yom HaTzmaut, I'm pretty sure of this, even if they do Yom HaTzmaut on Dalet Iyar, in a specific, like last year, for example, he'll say Friday, so that's Thursday. On Friday, he'll still say Hallel, he won't say Hallel on the earlier day. So what's going on here? So Rav Shechter writes the following. Anyone take a stab at Rav Shechter here? It's in English. It's incredible. It's also Rav Shechter. I don't know if you were there. He made a scene last night. Awesome. And Rav Shechter, Shlita. Come on, someone read Rav Shechter. I mean, it'd only be right if someone read it. That wasn't me. It's in English. Come on.
I got it.
Thank you. Go.
It would seem obvious that the War of Independence, which broke out immediately after Hakamas and Medina, is the war that Guevara was referring to. Indeed, the fact that the outbreak of the war and the Declaration of Independence occurred simultaneously serves as a sign that the Hakamas and Medina itself was truly an Atzchaltag de Geula. If a Jewish government is established and this leads to the outbreak of a war with enemies of the Jewish nation, it is the beginning of the war that is the Atzchaltag de Geula.
Wow, says Rav Shechter, you're right that the war itself didn't end on Hey Iyar of Ehrenberg. And so maybe you might want to claim that there was no nace that took place on Hey Iyar. You know what started on that day? Not the Geula itself. I mean, Letzareinu, we're still not with Geula today. As the Salavitch writes at the end of the sixth Knox, he says that in Kol Dodo Fake, when it actually was written, you know, the original Kol Dodo Fake, meaning the lover knocking on the door of the beloved in Shir HaShirim, he doesn't wait too long. He waits a couple of minutes, maybe he knocks a bunch of times, and then she doesn't get out of her bed, and she makes the excuses, unfortunately. How many of us have made excuses, unfortunately, with these knocks as well? And as Salavitch says, we are zoche, to be living in a generation where it wasn't only a few days, or a few hours, or a few minutes that Ibn Shalom knocked on our door. I would argue he's still knocking on our door, Ali Amazen. I would argue that those six knocks that Salavitch referred to in 1956, a mere 8 years after the Hakamas HaMedina, in 72 years, how many more knocks of the state of Israel can we see? And by the way, I would argue, and I've said this many times, and I believe this fervently, that each and every one of us has personal knocks in our lives. We have knocks, or the Siva Shalom writes about Tzaras, that Tzaras was a knock, was a kriya from the Ribono Shel Olam to help us achieve our goals, to help us get further in life. I'd argue that we have knocks specifically about our religious Zionism as well. There are moments in every one of our lives that the Ribono Shel Olam is knocking at our door. Moments that we may not have perceived as being knocks. Maybe we miss them. Maybe we got to put our glasses on. Maybe we got to put our windshield wipers on so we could see clearly. And I think that we each get knocks. And the question is, when do we answer those knocks? Speaking of knocks, so Rav Schechter points out here that maybe on the fifth day of Iyar, even if we didn't win the war, the fact that the war began, the fact that there was a war that began simply because the Jewish people took what literally the nations of the world had voted on to give us, a little sliver of land in a partition plan. The fact that we declared a state and that we were going to have our own leadership, and the world at large either stayed away or directly attacked us, means, says Rav Schechter, that this must be an etchat gula. This must be the beginning of the gula. Okay, and Dafka actually focuses on, this is why I brought this here, because he focuses on, Rav Ehrenberg pointed out, the distinction between Chanukah and the Chashmonaim versus what happened in Yom HaTzmaut. He said the celebration of Chashmonaim victories recorded in the Megillah Tainah did not commemorate the victories per se. The Chashmonaim celebrated when they were victorious in battle because there was a Beis HaMikdash in existence at the time. And their victory served to preserve the Beis HaMikdash and spare it from destruction or defilement. Meaning, they weren't celebrating the actual victories. Rav Ehrenberg, you're right that they were on the days when the victories happened. But it wasn't the victory that they're celebrating per se, says Rav Schechter. The victory was that they were able to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash. They were able to stop it from being defiled. That was the victory. That was the victory. Says again Rav Schechter, therefore it was logical to celebrate the Yom Tov on the day of the victorious conclusion of the battle. Not because of the victory itself, but because of what happened in that victory. Contrast that the Israeli army is victorious over the Arab nations, though it would be appropriate to celebrate with the Suda Soda and the recitation of Hallel on that occasion, we should not establish a Yom Tov. And it's important that entails annual observance, since the victory did not preserve the Beis HaMikdash. The reason to establish the Yom Tov is to mark the historical event of Etchat of the Geulah. Therefore, it was appropriate to institute Yom Tov or Yom HaTzmaut on the date of the outbreak of the War of Independence, as that day marked the Hakamas HaMedina, which was the Etchat of the Geulah. What an incredible piece from Rav Schechter. Again, we've seen three different versions of what is going on in Hei Iyar. Ehrenberg on one side, nothing at all, no Shechianu, there was no win. We should maybe have a different day when the actual war of independence was won. That's the day we should have as a celebration. Rav Kook, on the other hand, says, no, the fact that the Ben Gurion had the guts inside of him, staring at a bear and a lion, to say, I'm going to take my flock and we're going to settle in our land and we're going to say this is ours, that was the miracle. And Rav Schechter says, no, maybe the fact that we were attacked, simply by saying, so words, just saying, this is our land now. They gave it to us. Saying it's our land, Rav Schechter says, that's the schat of the gula. And if it's the schat of the gula, that's deserving of it. Question number two, to accept or not to accept. In 1952, the country of Germany was reflecting on its past sins, particularly the past sins of the Holocaust. And they offered, right, whereas unspeakable criminal acts were perpetrated against the Jewish people during the National Socialist regime of terror. That's an understatement. Right, and whereas, okay, now therefore the State of Israel and Federal Republic of Germany have agreed to the following, and it's called reparations. And if you've heard of reparations, this is in 1952 on September 10th. Reparations from Germany. Essentially, Germany was basically offering to pay a debt to the State of Israel, pay a financial amount of money to the State of Israel, and in doing so, essentially looking back at their experience in the Holocaust. And by the way, just in case people came in a little bit earlier, this is the second of the topics we're going to discuss today. But if you want to turn your screens on, again, no pressure. But I think it helps everybody feel an Avirah of Kol Torah and Avirah of Limud Torah together. No pressure, but it's an option. Just want to state that. Shkoyah. Okay. So what happens here? What do we do? Do we accept or do we not accept? To accept or not to accept, do we take this money from the Germans? And by the way, you could probably think of the reasons on one hand or the other hand in your own mind, on a political sphere for sure. Ben-Gurion, who wants to read? Ben-Gurion made a strong argument. Who wants to read? Ravavi, you want to read Ben-Gurion's the summary of Ben-Gurion's arguments? Oh, he's frozen.
Ben-Gurion made arguments in order to convince his colleagues in the Knesset to vote for the agreement. Quoting the famous verse from Malachim, I'll put on Mickey Mouse in 1 second. Malachim Chaf Aleph Yud Tes, Haratzacha V'gam Yirashka, have you killed and also take possession? He explained that Israel should not allow the German murderers to benefit from the death of their victims. He also claimed that the greatest revenge against the atrocities of the Nazis would be to use their money to build a Jewish homeland.
So says Ben-Gurion, I think this is a nice logical argument. Wait a second. Not only are we going to allow them to kill us, we're going to allow them to take our money too? And they're going to use that to build their own state? Chas v'shalom. You know what the best way to spit in Hitler's face is? Not only to have more Jewish children in this world, but by taking the money and establishing the State of Israel. The State of Israel. That would be the biggest spit in his face. That's Ben-Gurion's argument. Menachem Begin, well, I mean, I don't know if you know, the Menachem Begin, Ben-Gurion, you know, if you don't, you should read some history over there. Menachem Begin goes in a totally different direction. And in fact, he specifically looks towards the religious members of the Knesset when making this argument. Does anyone want to read Menachem Begin's argument? I have it in the Hebrew original here, but we'll read it in English on the left-hand side for the interest of time. Anyone want to read Menachem Begin's argument? We get a volunteer. Loving that. You guys are awesome. Amazing. By the way, a big shout out to everyone for showing up on Yom HaTzmaut when you have no classes to come and learn Torah. It's amazing. Amazing. That being said, someone volunteer and read?
I can read.
There we go. Let's go.
In English?
Yeah, please.
You went to your constituents during the election, not with this issue in mind. You went to the people for the sake of the Jewish religion, for the dignity of the Torah of Am Yisrael. But what does the Torah of Am Yisrael have to do with the negotiations of Amalek? By doing so, you might as well erase a holy and sacred verse from the Torah. God carries his war against Amalek from generation to generation. How would God fight Amalek if you, the protectors of religion, vote for making peace with Amalek merely for the sake of accepting money from him?
Wow. Says Menachem Begin, don't get convinced by this argument that we should use this money. Thank you so much, Tiferet. Don't get caught up in this argument. Oh, it's a good way to spit in Hitler's face if we take the money and use it for ourselves. No! Don't let them think that they're getting the ability to step away from the criminal, horrific acts of the Holocaust and to say, oh, we'll pay it off. It's a debt. We killed 6 million. We'll give you a couple of $1 billion. Says Menachem Begin, there is no equation. There is no way. How could you? Specifically, looks dafka at the datiyim, right? The chevre, I'm like, oh, hadatiyot. What are you doing? You're going to vote in favor of this? You're going to make peace with Amalek? How could you? That's Menachem. And the Nevi Zahrav, Shechter brings down two reasons from Soloveitchik as to why he opposes the reason. Why he opposed at the time the agreement of reparations. On one, Accepting the money might indicate that the Jewish people had forgiven the Germans for the atrocities they committed. That is Menachem Begin's argument directly. Number two, if you don't see where we are, number two here. Okay, well, I'll even bold it for you. Number two, he believed that the Germans... Oh, he gives it out to Strigans. Okay, here we go. Ah, number two, he believed that the Germans have the status of Amalek, and therefore we are not allowed to enjoy any benefit from them. But Soloveitchik essentially says exactly the same argument, but in a halachic term, essentially, splitting it into two factors. One is that we shouldn't have given them the apology, and number two is they're Amalek. We can't make... what are you doing? We don't get any benefit. It's not only making peace with them to forgive them, it's... We can't get better. We can't get Hanukkah from Malik. So they understood that Malik is not a specific race of people, rather an entity that wishes to destroy the Jewish people. Rav Shechter, and this is what I love about Nevesh HaRav, and not really any of the reflections that Rav Shechter has on the Soloveitchik. Rav Shechter says those were initial thoughts. But then in later years, he heard that Rav Soloveitchik admitted that he may have made a mistake by opposing the payments. Because in retrospect, the reparations saved the Jewish state. That money, after all, was a significant boost to the economy that did not exist and to the military efforts that also did not exist. To be able to use that money to fight off enemies and to be able to use that money to build the state of Israel, says Soloveitchik, maybe I made a mistake initially arguing against taking the money, but in retrospect, it was actually saving the Jewish state. We'll get to that in a minute. Very basically, Asli Yisrael, this is the Apsak Halacha in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Reish Nun Dalin, Shalom Kabbat Tzedakah Me'acherim, and he has two Sivim. The first one is a Fah. Asli Yisrael, Lito Tzedakah Me'na'obit Kochavim Befar Hesya. A Jew is not allowed to take money, it's Tzedakah specifically, from an Obi Kochavim in public. Okay? V'meina Yachol Lichyos B'Tzedakah Yisrael, V'meina Yachol Litva Me'avod Kochavim B'Tzinah Harizim Mutter. And this is a very, very important part. If a person can't live on their own with their own money, and if a person can't get the money from an Ovi Kachavim Bitsina privately, then it would be mutter. In other words, if someone really is at a stage, so initially it's also to take that money, and we'll discuss what it is that's also about it. And in fact, the Chachamas Adam right here points out, because it's all about Chilul Hashem, Sheyisol Imifar Hasim Otam. That Bnei Yisrael themselves aren't paying, right? They aren't paying a Jew to help them live in a situation they're in. So to take money from Ovi Kochavim is really a Chilul Hashem. The Jews won't take care of you, so I'll come and take care of you. So it's an issue of Chilul Hashem. That's what Chacham Sadam says. Says Yoredeya, yeah, that is the issue. That's why we can't take it initially in public. It'd be a Chilul Hashem. But there's also a second stipulation here. If I can't live in the Tzedakah of Yisrael, and it's true, there's not enough there. And in Yachalitlam, and we can't get it privately. The German government wasn't about to start giving it privately. They wanted to make it very well known that they were giving reparations to the state of Israel on behalf of what their atrocities of the Holocaust. And there is room, if a person really needs it, to be able to accept this money. It's not ideal, but there's room to accept it. These two halachos, this idea of the Chilul Hashem, really at the core of it, and really also the idea of being able to live and really pikuach nefesh, as the Soloveitchik pointed out at the end, that it saved the Jewish state. And by the way, when he means he saved the Jewish state, we're talking about save the Jewish people in the Jewish state. Because if the Jewish state fell under, any Jew that was in that area would have been Judenrein all over again. So we're talking about not just taking that money to build an economy. We're talking about taking that money to be able to save Klal Yisrael. Rav Mordechai Fromm, a former Rebbe in Yeshiva Merkaz Harav, explains, again, based on the Gemara, that there are a couple of ways of understanding this. Number one, the Gemara Bava Basra, right, that was quoted, I didn't include it here, is concerned that accepting funds from a non-Jewish government might give the donors merits which might empower them to rule over the Jewish people. That's one concern. One concern, not only is there a concern that looks like a Chilul Hashem, there's also a concern that maybe they're going to be able to take over and say, actually, we owned you. We owned you. No such thing as a free lunch. You know what I'm saying? Definitely not on Zoom. No such thing as a free lunch. You know, maybe when the clubs are running lunch events, you can have a free lunch. But no such thing as a free lunch on Zoom. However, the question before us is a totally different one. Everything changes once we have an independent Jewish state permitting the Jewish state to accept foreign aid. Would cause the opposite result, as this money would in fact strengthen the Israeli state. It wouldn't make us subject to the individuals that are giving us the aid. No, we make them strong. We're building a strong Jewish country. We're weakening the rule of other nations over us. And the last point that he makes is because in that situation, one is permitted to accept donations. Perhaps based on that last point, from and based on perhaps a reflection from Soloveitchik himself in Nefesh HaRav, that regarding Kuach Nefesh, regarding the saving of life, those are major, major, major discussions that need to be understood, and again, in this conversation. But again, throughout all of history, there's never been a mass of Jewish people like the state of Israel having to answer questions like, can we take reparations in this situation? This is not only a political decision, as we saw initially in Big Machlokes in Ben Gurion and Menachem Begin, but this is a Machlokes, the Shem Shemayim. By the way, Soloveitchik was the only one opposed initially. Rav Aaron Kotler supposedly also said, you can't take the money. So many of the Gedolim of the time were like super against taking that money. They ended up taking the money. And then many, many people realized afterwards how important that money was to saving Am Yisrael. Yeah, I have two more minutes because I want to be able to get off so I could cover the kids and Panina can get on. And she's giving the next year at 11:45, Mirtz Hashem, I'm pretty sure. So I just want to leave off with the following. There's a big question, a huge question, about the trial of Adolf Eichmann. And we typically look back, and I know this connects back to what we were just talking about regarding the Nazis and responding to the Holocaust. They caught Adolf Eichmann. I must inform you, the Knesset, that not long ago, the security services found one of the great Nazi war criminals, Adolf Eichmann, who was responsible, along with other Nazi leaders, for what they called the final solution to the Jewish problem, that is, the extermination of 6 million Jews in Europe. Adolf Eichmann is already under arrest in Israel and will soon face trial in Israel, in keeping with the laws governing justice for the Nazis and their helpers. That's Ben-Gurion's announcement on May 23rd, 1960. And Gideon Hausner speaks in front of the attorney general at the time, speaks in front of the court and says, when I stand before you here, judges of Israel, to lead the prosecution of Adolf Eichmann, I'm not standing alone. With me are 6 million accusers. But they cannot rise to their feet and point an accusing finger towards him who sits at the dock and cries, I accuse. The ashes are piled on the hills of Auschwitz and the fields of Treblinka. Therefore, I'm skipping to the end. Therefore, I will be their spokesman, and in their name I will unfold the awesome indictment. Says Gideon Hausner at that moment in 1960, we are finally at a point in time in history where we have a Jewish state, and we have a Jewish court, and we have a prosecutor who can bring to the charges against this Nazi war criminal, Adolf Eichmann, able to say, I'm standing on behalf of not only those living in the land of Israel, but also all the Jews around the world, past, present, and future. And the question of whether or not one is allowed to kill in a time like today, the state of Israel, this is not murder at all. He murdered. It would be us killing Adolf Eichmann for all of his atrocities. In that conversation, we don't have time to go through it all. In that conversation is a question of a goal hadam, someone running after someone else because they killed their own relative. How do I go after the initial killer? In that conversation is someone who kills a Jewish person, is responsible, especially a non-Jew, kills a Jewish person responsible for death. In that conversation is a big question of whether or not a Sanhedrin that kills once in even 70 years is considered to be a big problem. I want to just point out that since then, I don't think it's happened again. In that conversation is a question from the Rambam as to whether or not a Beit Din, take a look here, is still allowed to. And I want to just end off here with these Shilohs, these questions of this young Jewish state is an incredible, incredible reawakening of halachos that many of us may have learned. Many of us may have learned as not being shayach in today's time, but truly are. Executing a war criminal, establishing a state and making a yomtiv out of it. These are all huge questions. What do we do today? Ashreinu, ashreya ayin, ashreinu that we live in a time and a place that we can celebrate not only the state of Israel, but the opportunity the state of Israel has to bring Torah alive in a way that it hasn't been for generations and generations. I will now hand over the shiur slot. I think there's a different Zoom number If you'd like to join, maybe I could post it in the group. I'm pretty sure it's on the flyer, though. Panina will be giving a share. I'm pretty sure it's a different Zoom slot. Rabbi Avi, is it a different Zoom room?
Yeah, it's a different Zoom room. It should be on the flyer. I think if you want, you can post it here.
I'm going to post it quickly. I'm going to post it right now. Okay, and it'll be starting right. Okay, I'm
just posted.
Off
right. Rabbi, I just posted.
Oh, thank you.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yashar koach, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Chag Sameach.